Chapter 59. Fortune telling, Little Dorrit received a call that same evening from Mr. Plornish, who, having intimated that he wished to speak to her privately, in a series of coughs so very noticeable as to favor the idea that her father, as regarded her seamstress occupation, was an illustration of the axiom that there are no such stone-blind men as those who will not see, obtained an audience with her on the common staircase outside the door. "There's been a lady at our place today, Miss Dorrit," apostrophe Plornish growled, "and another one along with her as is a old wixen, if ever I met with such. The way she snapped a person's head off, dear me." ... The mild Plornish was at first quite unable to get his mind away from Mr. F.S. and for, ... said he, to excuse himself, "she is, I do assure you, the winnegariest party." ... At length, by a great effort, he detached himself from the subject sufficiently to observe, "but she's neither here nor there just at present. The other lady, she's Mr. Casby's daughter. And if Mr. Casby an't well off, none better, it an't through any fault of Pank's. For, as to Pank's, he does, he really does, he does indeed." ... Mr. Plornish, after his usual manner, was a little obscure, but conscientiously emphatic. "And what she come to our place for," ... he pursued, "was to leave word, that if Miss Dorrit would step up to that card which it's Mr. Casby's house that is, and Pank's he has a office at the back, where he really does, beyond belief she would be glad for to engage her. She was a old, and a dear friend, she said particular, of Mr. Clennam, and hoped for to prove herself a useful friend to his friend. Them was her words. Wishing to know whether Miss Dorrit could come tomorrow morning, I said I would see you, Miss, and inquire, and look round there tonight, to say yes, or, if you was engaged tomorrow, when. ... I can go tomorrow, thank you, ... said Little Dorrit. "This is very kind of you, but you are always kind." ... Mr. Plornish, with a modest disavowal of his merits, opened the room door for her readmission, and followed her in with such an exceedingly bald pretense of not having been out at all, that her father might have observed it without being very suspicious. In his affable unconsciousness, however, he took no heed. Plornish, after a little conversation, in which he blended his former duty as a collegian with his present privilege as a humble outside friend, qualified again by his low estate as a plasterer, took his leave, making the tour of the prison before he left, and looking on at a game of skittles with the mixed feelings of an old inhabitant who had his private reasons for believing that it might be his destiny to come back again. Early in the morning, Little Dorrit, leaving Maggie in high domestic trust, set off for the patriarchal tent. She went by the iron bridge, though it cost her a penny, and walked more slowly in that part of her journey than in any other. At 5 minutes before eight her hand was on the patriarchal knocker, which was quite as high as she could reach. She gave Mrs. Finching's card to the young woman who opened the door, and the young woman told her that Miss Flora having, on her return to the parental roof, reinvested herself with the title under which she had lived there was not yet out of her bedroom, but she was too pleased to walk up into Miss Flora's sitting room. She walked up into Miss Flora's sitting room, as in duty bound, and there found a breakfast table comfortably laid for two, with a supplementary tray upon it laid for one. The young woman, disappearing for a few moments, returned to say that she was too pleased to take a chair by the fire, and to take off her bonnet, and make herself at home. But Little Dorrit, being bashful, and not used to make herself at home on such occasions, felt at a loss how to do it, so she was still sitting near the door with her bonnet on, when Flora came in a hurry half an hour afterwards. Flora was so sorry to have kept her waiting, and good gracious why did she sit out there in the cold, when she had expected to find her by the fire reading the paper, and hadn't that heedless girl given her the message then, and had she really been in her bonnet all this time, and pray for goodness sake let Flora take it off. Flora, taking it off in the best-natured manner in the world, was so struck with the face disclosed, that she said, "Why, what a good little thing you are, my dear!" and pressed her face between her hands like the gentlest of women. It was the word and the action of a moment. Little Dorrit had hardly time to think how kind it was, when Flora dashed at the breakfast table full of business, and plunged over head and ears into loquacity. "Really so sorry that I should happen to be late on this morning of all mornings, because my intention and my wish was to be ready to meet you when you came in, and to say that anyone that interested Arthur Clennam half so much must interest me, and that I gave you the heartiest welcome, and was so glad, instead of which they never called me, and there I still am snoring, I dare say, if the truth was known, and if you don't like either cold fowl, or hot boiled ham, which many people don't, I dare say, besides Jews, and theirs are scruples of conscience which we must all respect, though I must say I wish they had them. Equally strong when they sell us false articles for real, that certainly ain't worth the money, I shall be quite vexed," said Flora. Little Dorrit thanked her, and said, shyly, "Bread and butter and tea was all she usually—" "Oh nonsense, my dear child, I can never hear of that," said Flora, turning on the urn in the most reckless manner, and making herself wink by splashing hot water into her eyes as she bent down to look into the teapot. "You are coming here on the footing of a friend and companion, you know, if you will let me take that liberty, and I should be ashamed of myself indeed, if you could come here upon any other, besides which Arthur Clennam spoke in such terms, you are tired, my dear." "No, ma'am. You turn so pale you have walked too far before breakfast, and I dare say live a great way off, and ought to have had a ride," said Flora. "Dear, dear, is there anything that would do you good?" "Indeed I am quite well, ma'am. I thank you again and again, but I am quite well." "Then take your tea at once, I beg," said Flora, "and this wing of fowl and bit of ham. Don't mind me, or wait for me, because I always carry in this tray myself to Mr. F.S. and to breakfasts in bed, and a charming old lady too, and very clever, portrait of Mr. F. behind the door, and very like, though too much forehead, and as to a pillar with a marble pavement and balustrades and a mountain, I never saw him near it, nor not likely in the wine trade, excellent man but not at all in that way." Little Dorrit glanced at the portrait, very imperfectly following the references to that work of art. "Mr. F. was so devoted to me, that he never could bear me out of his sight," said Flora, "though of course I am unable to say how long that might have lasted, if he hadn't been cut short, while I was a new broom, worthy man but not poetical, manly prose but not romance." Little Dorrit glanced at the portrait again. The artist had given it a head that would have been, in an intellectual point of view, top-heavy for Shakespeare. "Romance, however," Flora went on, busily arranging Mr. F.S. Ant's toast, "as I openly said to Mr. F. when he proposed to me, and you will be surprised to hear that he proposed 7 times, once in a hackney coach, once in a boat, once in a pew, once on a donkey at Tunbridge Wells, and the rest on his knees. Romance was fled with the early days of Arthur Clennam. Our parents tore us asunder, we became marble, and stern reality usurped the throne." Mr. F. said, very much to his credit, that he was perfectly aware of it, and even preferred that state of things accordingly the word was spoken to fiat. "Went forth, and such is life, you see, my dear, and yet we do not break but bend. Pray make a good breakfast, while I go in with the tray." She disappeared, leaving Little Dorrit to ponder over the meaning of her scattered words. She soon came back again, and at last began to take her own breakfast, talking all the while. "You see, my dear," said Flora, measuring out a spoonful or two of some brown liquid that smelt like brandy, and putting it into her tea, "I am obliged to be careful, to follow the directions of my medical man, though the flavor is anything but agreeable being a poor creature, and it may be, have never recovered the shock received in youth from too much giving way to crying in the next room when separated from Arthur. Have you known him long? ... As soon as little Dorrit comprehended that she had been asked this question for which time was necessary, the galloping pace of her new patroness having left her far behind, she answered that she had known Mr. Clennam ever since his return. To be sure, you couldn't have known him before, unless you had been in China, or had corresponded, neither of which is likely, returned Flora, for traveling people usually get more or less mahogany, and you are not at all so, and, as to corresponding, what about? That's very true, unless he, so it was at his mother's, was it really, that you knew him first? Highly sensible and firm, but dreadfully severe ought to be the mother of the man in the iron mask. Mrs. Clennam has been kind to me, said little Dorrit. Really? I am sure I am glad to hear it, because as Arthur's mother it's naturally pleasant to my feelings to have a better opinion of her than I had before, though what she thinks of me, when I run on as I am certain to do, and she sits glowering at me like fate in a go-cart, shocking comparison, really invalid, and not her fault, I never know or can imagine. Shall I find my work anywhere, ma'am? Asked little Dorrit, looking timidly about. Can I get it? You industrious little fairy, returned Flora, taking, in another cup of tea, another of the doses prescribed by her medical man. There's not the slightest hurry, and it's better that we should begin by being confidential about our mutual friend. Too cold a word for me, at least I don't mean that. Very proper expression, mutual friend, than become through mere formalities not you but me, like the Spartan boy with the fox biting him, which I hope you'll excuse my bringing up, for of all the tiresome boys that will go tumbling into every sort of company, that boy's the tiresomest. Little Dorrit, her face very pale, sat down again to listen. Hadn't I better work the while? She asked. I can work and attend to. I would rather, if I may. Her earnestness was so expressive of her being uneasy without her work, that Flora answered, well, my dear, whatever you like best, and produced a basket of white handkerchiefs. Little Dorrit gladly put it by her side, took out her little pocket housewife, threaded the needle, and began to hem. What nimble fingers you have, said Flora, but are you sure you are well? Oh yes, indeed. Flora put her feet upon the fender, and settled herself for a thorough good romantic disclosure. She started off at score, tossing her head, sighing in the most demonstrative manner, making a great deal of use of her eyebrows, and occasionally, but not often, glancing at the quiet face that bent over the work. You must know, my dear, said Flora, but that I have no doubt you know already, not only because I have already thrown it out in a general way, but because I feel I carry it stamped in burning, what's his name's upon my brow, that before I was introduced to the late Mr. F. I had been engaged to Arthur Clennam. Mr. Clennam in public, where reserve is necessary, Arthur here, we were all in all to one another. It was the morning of life, it was bliss, it was frenzy, it was everything else of that sort in the highest degree. When rent asunder we turned to stone, in which capacity Arthur went to China and I became the statue bride of the late Mr. F. Flora, uttering these words in a deep voice, enjoyed herself immensely. To paint, said she, the emotions of that morning when all was marble within, and Mr. F.'s aunt followed in a glass coach, which it stands to reason must have been in shameful repair, or it never could have broken down two streets from the house, and Mr. F.'s aunt brought home like the 5th of November in a rush-bottom chair, I will not attempt, suffice it to say, that the hollow form of breakfast took place in the dining room downstairs, that Papa, partaking too freely of pickled salmon, was ill for weeks, and that Mr. F. and myself went upon a continental tour to Calais, where the people fought for us on the pier until they separated us, though not forever, that was not yet to be. apostrophe, the statue bride, hardly pausing for breath, went on, with the greatest complacency, in a rambling manner sometimes incidental to flesh and blood. I will draw a veil over that dreamy life. Mr. F. was in good spirits. His appetite was good. He liked the cookery. He considered the wine weak but palatable, and all was well. We returned to the immediate neighborhood of number 30 Little Gosling Street, London Docks, and settled down. Ere we had yet fully detected the housemaid in selling the feathers out of the spare bed, gout flying upward soared with Mr. F. to another sphere. Apostrophe, his relict, with a glance at his portrait, shook her head, and wiped her eyes. I revere the memory of Mr. F. as an estimable man and most indulgent husband, only necessary to mention asparagus, and it appeared, or to hint at any little delicate thing to drink, and it came like magic in a pint bottle. It was not ecstasy, but it was comfort. I returned to Papa's roof and lived secluded, if not happy during some years, until one day Papa came smoothly blundering in, and said that Arthur Clennam awaited me below. I went below, and found him ask me, not what I found him, except that he was still unmarried, still unchanged. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the dark mystery with which Flora now enshrouded herself might have stopped other fingers than the nimble fingers that worked near her. They worked on without pause, and the busy head bent over them watching the stitches. Ask me not, apostrophe, said Flora, if I love him still, or if he still loves me, or what the end is to be, or when. We are surrounded by watchful eyes, and it may be that we are destined to pine asunder. It may be never more to be reunited. Not a word, not a breath, not a look. To betray us all must be secret as the tomb. Wonder not, therefore, that even if I should seem comparatively cold to Arthur, or Arthur should seem comparatively cold to me, we have fatal reasons. It is enough, if we understand them. Hush! Apostrophe, apostrophe, all of which Flora said with so much headlong vehemence, as if she really believed it. There is not much doubt that when she worked. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.